Welcome to another episode of Stories, Tales, Myths, and Legends. My name is Nathan, and in this episode, I'm going to read you something I've adapted from the work of Xenophon. In Book 2, Chapter 1 of Memorabilia, Xenophon has a short excerpt regarding the choice of Hercules. It is this excerpt that I've adapted. I hope you enjoy my interpretation of The Choice of Hercules. The Choice of Hercules. Hercules, arriving at the part of his youth when young men choose for themselves and show by the result of their choice whether they will, in the succeeding stages of their lives, walk the path of virtue or of vice, went out into a solitary place fit for contemplation to consider which of the two paths he should pursue. He was sitting at a crossroads in the shade of an olive tree when he saw two women, larger in stature than ordinary women, approaching toward him, each along a different road. One of them had a gentle and amiable aspect. Her beauty was natural and easy, her person and shape clean and handsome, her eyes cast toward the ground with an agreeable reserve, her motion and behavior full of modesty, and her raiment white as snow. The other woman wanted all the native beauty and proportion of the former. She was swelled by luxury and ease to a size quite disproportioned and uncomely. She had painted her complexion so that it might seem fairer and more ruddy than it really was, and she was endeavored to appear more graceful than ordinary in her mien through a mixture of affectation in all her gestures. Her eyes were full of confidence, and her dress transparent, that the conceited beauty of her person might appear through it to advantage. She cast her eyes frequently upon herself, then she turned them on those who were present to see whether anyone regarded her, and now and then looked on the figure her own shadow made. As they drew nearer, he stood, and the first woman continued at her same composed pace, while the latter, striving to get before her, ran up to Hercules and addressed herself to him in the following manner. "I perceive, my dear Hercules, you are in doubt as to which path in life you should pursue. If then you will be my friend and follow me, I will lead you to a path most easy and delightful, where you will taste all the sweetness of life and live exempt from every trouble." Hercules, distracted by the pseudo-confidence of the woman that was amplified by the sheerness of her dress and her painted visage, which seemed stranger up close, fought to maintain his focus on the task at hand, contemplating virtue and vice. The woman continued, leaning in close to Hercules, pressing her soft body into the hardness of his. "You will neither be concerned with war nor the affairs of the world, but shall only consider how to gratify all your senses, your taste with the finest dainties and most delicious drink." She ran her plump fingers over his lips. "Your sight should be met with the most agreeable objects, your scent with the richest perfumes and fragrant odors, how you may enjoy the embraces of the fair while you repose on the softest beds, then render your slumbers sweet and easy." Her hands started moving over his muscular body. "There is nothing you shouldn't enjoy, without even the smallest care. You deserve glorious and mighty blessings." Her hand lingered where it had the worst effect on his concentration. "The sources of those invaluable blessings might at some time or other fail for others, but not for you. You will never be obliged to acquire them at the expense of your mind or the united labor and fatigue of your body." She stood behind him and whispered in his ear, "I assure you that you shall freely enjoy all of the industry of others, undergo neither hardship nor drudgery, but have everything at your command that can afford you any pleasure or advantage." She rounded around Hercules's hulking mass and met his eyes squarely. He thought for a moment of how best to address the manifestation standing before him, and meeting her gaze, asked, "And what is your name, fair lady?" Intentionally playing to her efforts. "My friends and those who are well acquainted with me call me Happiness. But my enemies and those who would injure my reputation have given me the name of Pleasure." In the meantime, the other lady approached, but stayed just out of arm's reach, and in her turn accosted him in this manner. "I also am come to you, Hercules, to offer my assistance. I, who am well acquainted with your divine extraction, and have observed the excellence of your nature even from your childhood, from which I have reason to hope that if you would follow the path that leads to my residence, you will undertake the greatest enterprises and achieve the most glorious actions, and I shall thereby become more honorable and illustrious among mortals." Her directness captured Hercules's attention. "But before I invite you into my society and friendship, I will be open and sincere with you. I must lay down an established truth, that there is nothing truly valuable that can be purchased without pains and labor." She shot a glance of disdain toward pleasure, and looking her up and down, continued as if pleasure's physical representation was aiding her argument. "The gods set a price on every real and noble pleasure." She turned her gaze back toward Hercules. "If you would gain the favor of the gods, you must be at the pains of worshiping them. If you would be beloved by your friends, you must study to oblige them. If you would be honored by any city, you must be of service to it. And if you would be admired by all Greece on account of your probity and valor, you must exert yourself to do her some eminent service." She turned her gaze to the farmers in the distant fields, and her voice softened. "To render your fields fruitful, to fill your arms with corn, you must labor and cultivate the soil accordingly. To grow rich by your herds, proper care must be taken of them." She looked back to Hercules, took in his muscular bulk, and shifted her argument. "If you wish to extend your dominions by arms, liberate your captive friends, and bring your enemies to subjection, you must not only learn from those who are experienced in the art of war, but also exercise yourself in the use of military affairs." She pointed to Hercules's head. "To excel in the strength of body, you must keep your body in due subjection to your mind, and exercise it with labor and pains." Here pleasure broke in. "Do you see, my dear Hercules, the long and difficult ways this woman would lead you to her promised delights? Follow me, and I will show you a much shorter and easier way to happiness." "Alas," cried the goddess of virtue, whose visage glowed with a passion made from scorn and pity. "What happiness can you bestow? What pleasure can you taste? You, who never does anything to acquire it. You, who takes your fill of pleasures before you feel an appetite for any. You eat before you are hungry. You drink before you are thirsty. And that you may please your taste, must have the finest artists, the richest wines to drink with pleasure. And to give your wine the finer taste, you use ice and snow luxuriously to cool it in the heat of summer. To make your slumbers uninterrupted, you must have the softest down and the easiest couches. All little enough, heaven knows, for you haven't prepared yourself for sleep by anything you have done. You seek it only because you have nothing better to do. It is the same in the enjoyments of love, that you would rather force than follow your inclinations. You are obliged to use arts and to even pervert nature to keep your passions alive. Thus it is that you instruct your followers, kept awake for the greatest part of the night by debaucheries and consuming in drowsiness the most useful parts of the day. Though immortal, you are an outcast from the gods and despised by good men. Never have you heard the most agreeable of all sounds, your own praise. Nor have you ever beheld the most pleasing of all objects, any good work from your own two hands. Who would ever give any credit to anything that you say? Who would assist you in your necessity? What man of sense would ever venture to participate in your mad parties? Those who follow you are robbed of their strength when they are young and void of wisdom when they grow old. In their youth, they are bred up in indolence and all manner of delicacy and pass their old age with difficulties and distress, full of shame for what they have done, oppressed with the burden of what they are, squanderers of pleasures, and hoarders up of afflictions in their old age. On the contrary, my conversation is with the gods and with good men, and there is nothing excellent performed by either without my influence. I am respected above all things by the gods and by the best of mortals, and it is just that I should be. I am an agreeable companion to the artisan, a faithful security to masters of families, a kind assistant to servants, a useful associate in the arts of peace, a faithful ally in the labors of war, and the best uniter of all friendships. My votaries, too, enjoy pleasure in everything they eat or drink, even without having labored for it, because they wait for the demand of their appetites. Their sleep is sweeter than that of the slothful and inactive. They are neither overburdened by the sweetness of Morpheus when they awake, nor do they, for the sake of him, omit the necessary duties of life. My young men have the pleasure of being praised by those who are long in years, and those who are long in years are honored by those who are young. They look back with comfort on their past actions and delight themselves in their present employments. By my means, they are favored by the gods, beloved by their friends, and honored by their country. And when the appointed period of their lives has come, they are not lost in dishonorable oblivion, but live and flourish in the praises of mankind, even to the latest posterity. Thus, my dear Hercules, who is descended from divine ancestors, you may acquire by virtuous toil and industry this most desirable state of perfect happiness. Hercules looked at each woman and thanked them for their discourses. He then bade them to leave him to his contemplation. Pleasure spoke first. When you have made your choice, simply follow the road that either of us walked down. Once you've started on your journey, the results of your choice will begin to manifest, said the more modest woman. Then the two, as if in unison, turned and walked down their respective roads until they disappeared, leaving Hercules alone. He resumed his post, sitting under the olive tree. It was true, he wanted to enjoy happiness and the pleasures of life. And if the end result was the same, what did it matter how you got there? He looked across the fields back to the farmer who was toiling with his work. He looked tired, hunched over with his labors, and from this distance, Hercules thought he could make out the anguish of a joyless man. What good is happiness and pleasure if only experienced at the end of anguish and joylessness, he thought. But then again, greatness was never achieved by anyone who failed to do anything. Hercules wanted greatness too. He sat there a long time, contemplating which path he should go down, watching the sun sling low in the sky and the shadow of the olive tree lengthen. The man from the field began coming down one of the roads toward him. Of all the things the man could be doing as he walked, he whistled a tune. Hercules was perplexed. Anguishing, joyless men didn't whistle. As the man approached, Hercules again stood.
"Well met," he said to the man as he approached.
"Well met indeed," replied the farmer. "I've seen you sitting here all day. At first I thought you were just watching me, but now that I'm closer, it seems as though something weighs heavy on you."
"A choice," replied Hercules.
Choices may be the hardest thing we ever make." The farmer took out his wineskin, drew from it, then extended his arm, offering it to Hercules. Hercules, having nothing to drink or eat all day, accepted the offer and took a long draught himself.
"Did you see the two women earlier today?"
he asked as he held the wineskin back out for the farmer.
"No, just you all day."
"I'm to follow one of them down one of these roads, and I cannot decide which I should."
He looked at the farmer, who was tan and had deep wrinkles from working long hours in the sun.
"May I ask you something?"
The farmer looked enthused. He was rarely asked questions by anyone. Having his opinion value would be an altogether new experience.
I've watched you work that field all day and held assumptions about how you felt about it for just as long. But now that I see you, I'm questioning them.
Then came the whopper of a question.
Have you found happiness?
The farmer looked at Hercules and saw the earnestness with which he asked the question, and without hesitation he answered, yes. Then he moved toward the trunk of the olive tree and asked, may I sit? I've been hard at it all day.
Of course, replied Hercules.
The farmer sighed deeply as he sat and rested his back against the trunk and began to elaborate on his answer.
I've not found happiness. It found me. It found me in the dirt being turned by my plow. It resides in the richness of the earth at my feet, and as I move across it, it nourishes and energizes my soul. It found me through the salty sweat of my brow and the dirt under my fingernails. It reminds me I'm alive and I have something to give. It found me through the laughter of my children, through the songs of birds, through watching the fox hunt mice across the fields, through the feeling I get as clouds blot out the sun on a hot day. It hides in the smells of the coming rains and washes over me as a mother bathing her babe.
And pleasure? Asked Hercules.
The farmer held up the wine jug and laughed. That too, that too.
In the wineskin?
No, I jest. Pleasure found me as well. It found me in a good meal after a long day's work. It found me in the embrace of my wife. It's present in the rosy cheeks of my little ones, present in the bark of my dog and the baying of my horse. It even found me here, in the shade of an olive tree, conversing with a stranger.
He looked at Hercules tenderly in the eyes and continued,
the simplest of pleasures are only enjoyed by the most profoundly humble of men.
Could you experience these things without the work in the field?
The farmer looked perplexed.
No, not in the same way. It's the juxtaposition of the work that brings value to where happiness and pleasure find you. Without the work, the experience of pleasure and happiness would be pastels and lack the vibrancy of a life well lived. They lack the greatness that only effort may bring. The reward of a windfall is short-lived, but the reward of hard work embeds itself in the calluses on your hands, the wrinkles in your brow, and the laugh lines of your eyes, and stays with you forever.
Hercules now understood which path he should take, for before him sat a man who made the choice, lived the life, and was pleased with his decision. And through living that life, he had gained the wisdom Hercules lacked, and the absence of that wisdom was what made the decision difficult for Hercules.
Thank you. You've helped me to make my decision, and I really should get started on my journey. But before I go, could I get your name, stranger?
No, stranger is fine. I have a feeling you will meet a lot of us on your path.
Hercules nodded, turned, and started down his path as the farmer sat under the olive tree, watching until he vanished from sight.
Xenophon was born and schooled in Athens in the 4th century BC, but later became more closely associated with Sparta. He worked as a mercenary, philosopher, and historian. He was a direct student of Socrates, and it is through his accounts of Socrates' discourses that we come across this depiction of Hercules' choice between virtue and vice. If you enjoyed this episode of Stories, Tales, Myths, and Legends, please subscribe to the podcast and maybe leave a review. That helps us get found a little easier by those who are looking. I'll be back with another story, tale, myth, or legend soon. Thanks for listening.